and welcome to another episode of Podcast DX, the show that brings you interviews with people just like you, whose lives are forever changed by a medical diagnosis. I'm Lita.
I'm Ron.
Jean Marie is not with us today. She's got a migraine. Collectively, we are the hosts of Podcast DX. On today's show, we're speaking with podcaster Christina, also known as Blind Chick Living, and her husband, Michael Gilchrist, a.k.a. The Caretaker. I like that. About glomerulonephritis. Their bio would probably give away the details of our whole interview, so I'm just going to jump right in and say good morning and welcome to our show.
Thanks for having us.
Good morning.
Christina, could you start us out by telling us your healthcare journey, how it all began? I mean, we read your bio, but let our listeners know.
Okay, yeah, sure. So when I was 12 years old, I went in for a sports physical. In that physical, they found out I had too much protein in my urine. So they sent me to a nephrologist, which is a kidney doctor. I had a biopsy and I was diagnosed with a strain of nephritis. We weren't sure what the strain was at that time. We just knew it was a form of nephritis. But it was super minor. Life went on like normal. When I was 22, I became pregnant. During that pregnancy, I developed toxemia. My doctor didn't catch it, so I ended up having seizures. So during those seizures, my optic nerve and my retina in both eyes imploded. So I was completely blind for about 6 months. I went on some medication. We cleared out the excess blood, and I was left with no central vision. So it's kind of like you look at the sun and you get that mark. It's like that. It never goes away. And it's just a bit bigger than the sun. So that happened. My hypertension went through the roof and I went into kidney failure.
Done all of that. Her baby had some issues. She was premature. They ended up feeding her, which you're not supposed to do. Her intestines weren't totally formed. So it turned into infection. So while she's dealing with all of that, her baby gets life flighted to another hospital. And go ahead.
Keep going. Tell them what happened.
Oh, and the amazing thing is that with the baby, their intestines will grow back.
Okay.
And so her intestines grew all back, and she's actually a happy, healthy 19-year-old now.
Yep,
so.
And she just had to have a colostomy bag for 6 months, mm-hmm. and it all grew back while she had it.
So then okay. You had your transplant. What?
Well, yep. So I actually ended up having... I left that hospital. I was sent out of that hospital and I had more seizures. And so I went to another hospital. And while I was at that hospital, they actually called him a kidney doctor. He put me on IV Lasix and literally put a Home Depot bucket next to my bed with my catheter in it. And I lost 97 pounds in 1 week. And the following week, I lost 36 pounds.
Wait.
And it was just all
liquid?
All toxic fluid.
And it wasn't something that they could tap with paracentesis?
With the PD catheter? This was more just to get the fluid off. This was the initial.
This was before dialysis. This is because
I've
of the toxemia. So during toxemia, from what I've heard, it basically you're allergic to the placenta. And so your body, how it protects you is it holds on to all your fluid and it becomes toxic in your body.
Okay.
And that's what caused the seizures and... me to have her prematurely.
Okay.
And
okay.
So to get that fluid off was that IV Lasix. Wow. And so it's insane how much I was walking around with on my body.
Oh, my God. You must have felt like a completely different human being after that.
I did, too. It was night and day difference. And it was crazy,
literally
too.
Overnight.
Yeah.
I had this baby girl that she was separated from me when I gave birth to her. And so we lost our connection.
Oh.
And so when I did go home from the hospital, I was supposed to take care of this really sick baby girl. And I remember thinking like, oh my gosh, do I have to take care of this kid forever? But I did grow a bond with her and now she's my beautiful baby, you know? So it took a little time, but it came.
Okay.
And so then I was going into kidney failure. So I live in Utah. I have 8 siblings. So I had 3 of my brothers tested. 1 was not a match. 2 were perfect matches. So they worked it together. On December 9th of 2008, I got a kidney transplant. My oldest brother, Brian, gave me a kidney. I only had to do about a month and a half of dialysis mm-hmm. before that transplant. And I remember joking saying I got a drive-through kidney because that just seemed so easy. compared to everything I had just been through, you know?
Sure, sure.
But yeah, she was talking shit. So now what happened?
Yeah, I spoke too soon because I rejected.
How long was it working with you? Any so length of time?
Yes, yes. So it never got up to full working creatinine, but it was in a decent range for about a year.
Okay.
And at about the year and 2 month mark, I went in for a lab and they were just ecstatic. They were just so upset, like, oh my gosh, you're in kidney failure. And so we did try to fight it at that point in time with high dose steroids. And we were able to keep that kidney going for about a year to a year and a half. Okay. I was definitely at a horrible percentage of function, but it was good enough to where I pushed it and didn't do dialysis for a while.
Okay.
But we did have to give up on that kidney eventually. So I did have to start in-center dialysis. And I'm not sure if your listeners know what dialysis is, but it's basically you go in, you sit in a chair there, they pull out your blood and they clean your blood. Most people don't realize when your kidneys stop, you actually stop urinating. And because that's what your kidneys do is create your urine. So anything you drink after you go into kidney failure stays on your body. So you're walking around with that on your body. And so that machine, it will take off your excess fluid and it will clean the toxins out of your blood. Because your kidneys are also responsible for cleaning out your potassium and your phosphorus in your blood.
Thank you for that explanation. That was an excellent explanation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and at that time, she asked to do peritoneal dialysis. But they told her there's no way you can do it. You're blind. You have to go in center.
And what peritoneal dialysis is, it's a form of dialysis. They jokingly call it the poor man's dialysis, but it's not. It's actually incredible. You do it in your abdomen. So you have a catheter that comes out of your abdomen. You hook up at night and you go to sleep. And it actually happens while you're sleeping. But what happens is it's actually a sugar water content that goes into your abdomen. And the sugar water creates osmosis.
Right.
So the sugar will absorb your excess fluid and the water, your body wants to even the pH throughout the whole body. So it will send some toxins to that clean water to even it out. And then the machine will automatically pull that dirty extra fluid off and put new clean on. And I did that 5 times each night. And how many times people do it is different. It all depends on the function and their prescription.
Sure.
So
sure.
I asked my doctor at that point if I could do PD, and he said, no, you're blind. And so I went in center. And in center, I ended up doing 5.5 years. And being a single mom, in center for me was just awful. Worst 5.5 years of my life because I can't drive. So for me, the average day waking up, walking my daughter a mile away to school, walking her back home, and then going to dialysis, performing dialysis in center, and then coming home, walking back to the school, picking her up, taking her back home, and then say it's soccer practice day. We're going to walk to the park in the other direction, and I'm going to basically try to recover under a tree while she's out practicing. Then we walk back home, and then my day's not over. It's dinner time. It's homework time. It's shower time.
Right,
a lot of people don't understand that when you do dialysis, and especially in center, most people with healthy kidneys get 168 hours of dialysis in a week. And when you go in center, you get between 9 and 12.
Okay.
And so that just kind of tells you you're running on zero dialysis. You're getting enough dialysis to get you back to your next treatment, and that's it.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, wow. You're not getting dialysis to thrive.
Right.
So when you go home from in-center dialysis, you actually have what's called a recovery time.
Okay.
And we all are different, but for most people, it takes up to 8 hours to recover and be back to kind of normal before you feel good again.
Okay.
So it really is a full day process. And
We kind of jumped ahead a little bit because our listeners may be wondering, well, why are you doing all this? And Michael, why the heck didn't you step up? Michael was not part of your life at that time, correct?
You're correct. Yeah. You're correct. I was a single mom. And believe it or not, he was a single dad doing his thing.
Okay.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. And so then you did that for 5.5 years. And that's what's amazing is, you know, it's hard enough just being a single parent on your own. But add dialysis and not being able to drive and all of that stuff on top of it, it's just freaking awesome.
Talk about putting a cape on her shoulders, huh?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Superwoman.
Yeah, she ended up getting another phone call.
Yep, I got that amazing phone call. And I'm sure you guys remember I had two perfect matches in my brothers.
Right.
Well, we still are not diagnosed at this point what strain we have. And so they're hoping that maybe a deceased donor, I'll have a different reaction.
Got it.
So that's why my other brother, I never received his kidney. On May 7th of 2016, I got the most amazing phone call that there was a kidney waiting for me. So I got my second kidney transplant, and this was a deceased donor. Uh-huh. And this is when, like, people don't realize when you are in center doing dialysis, your life goes on pause. Mm-hmm. I was in my 20s. So I watched all of my friends get married. I watched them all go on trips together. All of them have kids. All of them go camping together. You know, all those things you want to do with your friends in that age and those experiences you want to give your child. Mm-hmm. And I was barely doing the day to day. So when I received that kidney, it was time to press play and start living again. And that year for Christmas, my daughter got some luggage and we actually had tickets to fly out the next morning to go to Disneyland.
Oh, nice.
And it was our first trip together. It was just the two of us. And I am telling you, like, it was everything. It was everything. Having that kidney truly was life. And I started dating. Yeah. And I don't know why, but I never do Facebook. And I had my 10-year-old daughter read my Facebook messages. And so she's over here messing with my phone. And she comes up to me and she's like, "Hey, Mom, you have a date on Friday." And I'm thinking, okay, honey, what creep are you talking to? You
know? Well, that creep was me. Uh-huh. I had no idea I was talking to her. Uh-huh. But thankfully, I behaved myself. So.
Yep. And so we ended up that Friday. He called me and he says, "I don't know what to do. My daughter really wants to come on the date." And I said, "Well, I'll bring mine." And we went out and it was like, a lot of people don't realize when you're sick, you spend a lot of nights alone, crying and sad, thinking you're never going to have what other people get. And it's not like you're worrying about having some big mansion or some big expensive thing. You're just the basics, just to be a wife, just to be like a grandma, just to be like those titles, you know, those are things that we think of. We just want those moments. And to be in a relationship with him and to say I had this man who loved me, it really did do so much for me mentally.
See, and I think a lot of it too was she was told no throughout her life so much. You can't do this. You can't do this. You're blind. You can't do this. And I had a handicapped sister growing up. So my mom taught me early on, heck with that. Just go and do it. They're going to have fun. Go and do it. You're not going to know unless you try.
And there's never going to be an opportune time. Like we hear people all the time like, "Oh, well, I was going to go do that, but I just didn't feel quite great." Sometimes you just got to push yourself to do it.
Yep. And experience you it. Just go do it. She wanted to drive. So, I mean, we ended up getting some property up in the mountains and I'd toss my keys and we'd go driving up in the mountains. And, you know, it's one of the scariest moments you can ever have, having a blind chick driving in the mountains. But she's having fun. Yeah. And I'd throw on the back of my motorcycle. We'd go take trips. But unfortunately, that kidney started to reject.
Okay. Yes. So shortly after I met Michael, I started the rejection process. And at that time, I was convinced in my mind, if I told him I was sick, he was gone. Because that's what had happened before. And so I tried to hide it from him for a little while, but it was impossible.
It got to the point where I started taking her to the appointments. And I actually looked forward to it because it was time we would sit and listen to comedians. We'd joke, we'd laugh. And my philosophy was everybody in her life is telling her that she's dying. She doesn't need that from me.
Right.
Pretty much my job is just make her laugh and embarrass her and that's it.
That's perfect. I love that. I love it.
But, you know, we had our dates and they would just go on for hours and hours, but it got to be so many infusions.
Well, so that's the thing. We decided to fight that rejection. And so I actually met with a big group of doctors down in a big city close to us. And we tested a bunch of medications. So what we're talking about here is we would spend days at the hospital in the infusion center for 6 to 8 hours. We would jokingly call them our dates, but I did chemo. I did chemo for over a year. I lost my hair, and that was one of those times where it was miserable, and I was so upset about it. I was such a superficial little girl. You know?
I like to joke that I have sympathy hair loss.
That was nice. That was nice of you. Good job. Yeah. Good job.
Yeah. Yep, but it was one of those moments where I went with my girls. When I woke up and found hair on my pillow, I took my girls and we went to the salon together and I shaved it all off and we had fun doing it. And I learned early on through this process, you're either going to cry and be miserable or you can find the silver lining and find something humorous. And that's what we tried to do. We tried to spin everything and find something about it that was funny. And we just held on to that.
Yeah, but we also had to think... all of these chemicals that we're pumping into a body over and over,
right.
What is it doing to a body in the long term?
Right.
You know, she's still in her 30s. You know, we're hoping to get a whole bunch more life left. Yeah. But we're also pumping her full of this stuff to where she was sicker doing infusions than she would be on dialysis.
Yeah. Okay.
So we decided to give up on that kidney.
Okay.
Sadly, we had to give up on that one. And that one, just like the first, I had to have removed when I rejected it because I rejected it so well. And that time, though, I decided I was going to go into dialysis a little more knowledgeable. And that's when I went and I really researched the peritoneal dialysis. So the dialysis in your abdomen. And I decided I could do it. And I was pretty determined. And I was adamant that Michael not play a part in it at all. Because, again, I did the second I put burden on him, he was going to bail.
Okay.
And so I wanted to be able to do it 100% on my own.
Okay.
And so I had to go to 5 different nephrologists and they all told me, no, I couldn't do it because of my eyesight. I went back to my original doctor for when I was 12 years old and I just begged him. I said, hey, I'm going to do this. Help me make it safe. And so we did. We started training and we came up with little tricks that worked for me. You have to be able to do a sanitary connection. The lines have to line up perfectly every time. You can't fumble around.
Okay.
With my eyesight, I have to fumble around for it. And so we came up with tricks where I would hold it in my thumb and my forefinger, and I would line up my pinkies together, and I would roll it. And every single time, it lined up perfect.
Okay.
And so we thought outside the box, and I went home on PD. I did a PD 100% on my own. Being legally blind, I set up the machine. I broke it down, everything. And that's why, like, home dialysis is so doable for people. And it's not easy by any means, but it's one of those things, if you put your mind to it, you can really make this work. And when I went home on PD, I had a lot of things happen that I didn't think would happen. I kind of was just going for convenience of doing it at my house and having my daytime free because I'd be doing it at night. But I had no idea I would feel so much better. I felt good on PD.
Right.
PD for me, it gave me life.
Right.
And what did we do on PD, Mike?
We went camping. We've done road trips. We've done dialysis on the back of a motorcycle. That one's a funny story. We were actually going to a
what? Dialysis on the back of a motor? You can't just glance over that. No.
I know. We were stuck in traffic. And she had fluid in her abdomen.
Yeah.
And we were going to change it when we got to the casino, but we had to do what we had to do. So we pulled over, we did an exchange, and she just sat on the back of my motorcycle. While we did that, it's not ideal, but neither is dialysis.
Right.
So that's kind of like when people ask why we do the things we do, one, it's because she wants to, and two, it's, what's the point of doing all of this if you're not going to be out living?
Okay.
If you're going to be so scared and you'd be stuck at home and you're not going to do anything, what's the point?
Sure.
We take this really serious. So we don't do anything without a plan. Mm-hmm. We had made an emergency kit and we had with us absolutely everything to have a sterile exchange. And most people don't understand, once you've got that water in your abdomen, after it's been a couple hours, it starts to absorb. And if I started absorbing that, I would be so heavy on my fluids since I'm not releasing any fluids.
Right.
So it was one of those where it just had to happen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I modified my trailer. we have some property up in the Utah mountains, and I modified my trailer a little bit so that we could do dialysis in it. Okay. And the cool thing about PD also is that you can disconnect almost at any time. And so we would have moose that come and walk by the property, and I'd be able to disconnect Christina, walk her out, and she'd be able to see the moose.
Oh, okay.
And that was something that she probably would have never experienced if we would have just done the day-to-day normal.
Right.
You can't do this. You're sick. So,
yeah.
Your positive attitude has kept you on a good path towards living a full life, no matter what the challenges that have been thrown at you. Could I ask real quick, what is glomerulonephritis?
Yes. I can't pronounce it.
Yeah. So I'll actually, if it's okay, if I explain that in a minute when I get diagnosed, is that okay?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So I got married while on PD. I became a wife. And again, like when I was 22, they told me 6 to 7 years was what I had to live. So in my mind, all I was focused on was being a parent, because I knew that little girl, she needed me. And being a wife was never in my cards. Mm-hmm. And PD allowed me to become a wife, you know?
So, again, like I said, my main job is just have fun and make a laugh. And like, so her parents would ask how dialysis is going. And I love dropping these little bombs and letting them explode with a mom, because like, see, how did it go? And it'd be, hey, we had all these alarms kept going off. She'd go, what did you do? And I would just joke, and I'd be like, I'd walk up and be like, oh, it got so bad. I just punched the machine, squeezed the bag, and then it went on. And then I walk away, and then she has to deal with explaining to her moms, he's just kidding.
Yeah.
You know, so we try to make it as fun as possible. But the bad thing
we did PD for 3 years. Mm-hmm. After 3 years, I noticed my catheter was kind of coming out a bit. And so I went in, we had surgery, and I was diagnosed with abdominal adhesion. What's abdominal adhesion?
It's basically when you have so many surgeries and you have scar tissue, your skull tissue wants to stick to anything that it can.
Right.
And I kind of refer it to as you're pulling plastic wrap off a roll and it immediately clings together. That's what her insides are doing. Right. And so her insides were just going and kinking off that tube.
Yep.
So
which does cause like constant pain now. It's something that there's no fix for it. There's no cure. There's really no treatment. You just have to break down the scar tissue on a regular basis. But once you keep up on it, you can kind of stop some of the pain, but it made PD no longer possible. So I had to go back into center. And so while I was in center, we learned about home hemodialysis.
Mm-hmm.
And home hemodialysis is the same dialysis they perform in centers. So it's the blood dialysis. And so it's a little more tricky than PD dialysis. And so at that time, I kind of sat down with Mike and he's like, hey, what do you think about this? And I told him, well, I don't want to do this to you, because of course I feel like I'm a burden. And if I'm that burden to him, he's going to be gone.
And the biggest thing that I have to tell, and I tell a lot of people, is you don't want to put your loved ones or your family through this, but I promise you, you already are. You're already putting them through it. I'm the one carrying her in from dialysis. I'm the one holding her hair while she's puking. I'm the one massaging her legs while she's cramping. We're already going through it. And if I can give her a better life and a better life for me, oh, we're going to jump on it.
Yeah.
So we decided to start the training process. But when we went to ask, she actually had a CVC, which is a central venous catheter.
Mm-hmm.
And they told her no. And it devastated her, because she's like, I don't know if I can keep doing in-center. In-center dialysis can work for some people. It doesn't work for Christina.
And see, when I started in center, I had a graft that was under my arm. So there's three ways to perform the blood dialysis. You can get what's called a fistula, and that's where they go in and they put this mesh and they connect a vein and an artery and they swell. And the rate of speed you have to go out during dialysis, you can't use a normal IV, a normal vein, because there's not enough blood flow. So that fistula swells up and it creates a higher content of blood flow. So you can actually move the blood quicker. So you have your options of fistula. You have a graft. A graft is just a plastic tube that they put in and they connect your vein and your artery. So that's less natural. And that one's got higher risk of infection than the fistula. And then there's also a CVC. You can run it on a CVC. You don't get as much of a cleaning because, again, you're not getting as much blood in and out as you do in a fistula or a graft. And so at that time, I had had a graft. Well, my first week of going in center, I noticed there was like a blood blister on my graft. And so I kind of asked them, hey, is this okay? And of course they're like, oh, it's fine. Just leave it alone. Leave it alone. So I did. We started training. Mm-hmm. He switched to nights. So basically he would work all night long. We'd go to training all day. He would sleep for a few hours and go back to work again.
And
amazing.
I'm an aircraft mechanic. So my job can be extremely hard sometimes. I'm hanging upside down off an aircraft, sanding. And so I had to start all over. Like she said, I went to nights, and my work is actually pretty awesome. They worked with me really great on it, but we were able to train probably, I think, faster than anybody that's ever trained. And we did our first treatment at home on Christmas Day.
Christmas Eve of 2021.
Mm-hmm.
And we had our whole family over, had a big dinner.
During COVID, on top of everything else.
Yeah. For the first time ever, dialysis kind of became what it truly is. We are the only organ. If we fail, there's a machine that can keep us alive. How lucky are we, you know? And this is a life-saving process. It shouldn't be a form of torture. And that day, with my family, it was so cute. We had the little kids pressing the blood pressure buttons. He was teaching the teenage kids how to pull heparin out of the syringes. And they were all seeing that they were helping save my life. And I think that day, it really opened up my mind, because I thought up until that point that to be strong, I had to hide everything from everyone that I loved. And that day kind of made me realize that I could let them in, and not only could I benefit from that by not doing it on my own, but they could benefit as well.
Right.
We now have nieces and nephews that they're not afraid of sickness.
Right.
Yeah. And that's pretty cool.
And the cool thing is our machine is actually sitting right next to us right now.
Yeah.
She did dialysis last night. And when we started, we didn't know if she would ever get another kidney transplant because she was undiagnosed. They had an idea of what kidney disease she had, but there was no way we could afford the genetic testing at that time. It was like $3 million or something like that. And of course, insurance didn't cover it. So, I mean, we were going to doctor to doctor to doctor, but we had to find something that would work for us no matter what, because it might be here forever. And it still might be. The good thing
we ended up doing home hemo during the day. We did 4 days a week for 3.5 hours. And what people don't understand is why in-center is so hard. So they run that machine as fast as they can, and they suck every bit of fluid off of you to where you're dehydrated. When you're at home, you own your own machine. So you're not limited on time. So you actually do more dialysis more often.
Okay.
So since you're doing it more often, you're actually keeping up on the toxins better. So they don't build up to where they were before. They build up to a moderate level, and you clean it. Clean it. So you're not having those huge energy and emotional ups and lows. So that kind of that roller coaster's
so it's a little bit more of an even keel.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. And so we slow my machine down. So my machine goes slower now. So I'm getting a more natural process, kind of like what you guys get. It's a slower, easier process on my body.
Okay.
So I don't have recovery times anymore.
Okay.
I get off dialysis and I feel great. I'm ready for my day. I don't have any restrictions on my diet anymore. I can eat whatever I want. And people who know the renal diet, it is hard. So if you can avoid that diet, do it.
And she's a gym junkie. So
a what?
Gym junkie.
Oh. Gym junkie. And if you would have ever, when you tell a dialysis patient that she unhooks from dialysis and then goes straight to the gym, it is jaw-dropping because you don't associate the two together.
Right.
And yet she is that way. And have you ever tried to argue with a dialysis patient about not going to the gym? Because you just can't. Yeah. I have no excuse that I can give her of why I don't want to go. So it motivates me too. But we actually do a different form of dialysis also.
Yep.
We do a nocturnal dialysis.
Okay.
So we even slow the machine down even more. We extend her time out, and we actually do it while we're sleeping.
Okay. Yeah, we started doing that about a year and a half after we had been home on hemo.
Okay.
So we did it during the day for a while. We got all the machine down, the alarms down, and then we switched to night.
Yep.
So currently I do 4 nights a week for 7.5 hours each night.
Okay.
So I am up to 30 hours of dialysis in a week.
Okay.
Which if you compare to that 9 to 12 in center is huge, a life-changing number.
Right.
And we're still taking this machine everywhere. We're going all across the country.
Yeah.
We're traveling. We're camping.
We ran a support group.
And we're still meeting with doctors and all this time trying to find what her diagnosis is.
Okay, so you were going to tell me.
Here we go.
All right, here we go.
This last December, I actually finally got diagnosed. We finally had some genetic testing done in Iowa. It's very expensive, so getting it paid for is very difficult. We finally got it paid for. And it came back that I have C3 globular nephritis. And what that is, that's when you have a mutation in your body. So this is a genetic condition. I got this from my parents, which is crazy because I'm the only one out of 8 kids that got it, you know, but is what it is. But so what it is you have a mutation in your protein. And so your body thinks your kidney is the enemy and it tries to kill it.
Okay.
And so that mutation pokes holes in your kidney until your kidney can no longer work. And so that's what I have. But I am very lucky because I have a strain that's actually never been seen before. My mutation is not in my proteins. They have no idea where it's at. So I have a mutation in my body, who knows where, that continues to kill my kidneys.
Does that cancel your chance to ever get another donation then?
No. So there is a medication that it actually has been around for like 30 something years, but just recently they started using it for patients in my scenario that their disease comes back and kills their transplant. And so it's called Soliris. It is extremely expensive. And it is a infusion that I will have to do the rest of my life once I receive a kidney.
Okay.
And I'll start out on higher doses and more often, and then hopefully we'll be able to kind of break it down to where I'm only doing it every month, maybe every couple months.
And her bad thing is that her antibodies are at 100% now. So trying to find a match is going to be almost impossible also.
Okay.
Because every time you get a blood transfusion or you get a kidney transplant, your body adapts to whatever you give it.
Right.
So then you develop antibodies. And since she's had so many transfusions, so many transplants, she has 100% antibodies. So,
which basically means if you took all of my matches, 100% of them, my body will kill. So we were looking for like a needle in a haystack.
Right.
Yeah. And so that means I am at the top of the list currently, but whenever a match comes, that's when I'll get one.
Okay.
But also, I'm sure you guys remember I was talking about that blood blister on my graft. Well, that continued to grow while I was in center. And one day it had burst and it was infection.
Oh.
And so I had to go in for emergency surgery to have my graft removed and everything cleaned out. Well, that spread to my heart and it ate a hole in my heart. And so this last November, November 30th, I went and had open heart surgery. I got a brand new cow aortic valve.
Okay.
And when we went in there, the doctor, so we all have a pericardium. It's a sac that holds our heart.
Right.
And it just kind of protects it.
Right.
My pericardium had completely calcified and was squeezing my heart. And so he said he basically had to peel my heart like a potato. And so like a 2-hour surgery turned into a
9 to 12 hour surgery.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
So And this is just who Christina is. When she's getting rolled out, she's grabbing my hand and asking me, am I doing okay? And I'm like, okay, well, let's worry about you. I'm fine. You know, and we accredit the home dialysis and all of that stuff on how she was able to heal from all of this stuff because she's healthier. Same with if she gets a transplant. We all hopeful. But if she does get a transplant, people that do home dialysis, they accept transplants so much better.
Okay. And so, it's because you actually, I've gotten stronger and healthier over time because I've been, when you go in center, little things kind of cause you to have to go to the hospital and have little surgeries. And like when you go home, those little things stop happening and your body's able to actually start bouncing back more. And so I have gotten stronger and healthier. And we now travel at least once a month and mm-hmm. we go around this country and we are talking to people about home dialysis. We are talking to them about their options and just making sure everyone who sits in those chairs knows that they have options. Yep. They have choices.
We were actually in Washington, D.C. this last weekend, and we were at a conference talking about dialysis access sites yep. and how we can improve them. And we were actually even talking about a needleless dialysis. It's still way
down
in
the line,
future, but they are actually talking about it.
And that's the most beautiful thing about kidney failure right now is there is such a huge buzz of things coming out to make our lives better.
Right.
Right now is such an amazing time because all these intelligent people that we get to benefit from them coming out with all these new devices and all these new systems. So like the future in dialysis looks so good. And I know I talked about my daughter for a minute, but my daughter was diagnosed when she was 11 as a type 1 diabetic. And I don't know how many people know this, but diabetes is a huge factor of kidney failure. If you have diabetes, please, mm-hmm. every single time you go into the doctor, ask your doctor to do a test on your urine. And because that is so important. And when my daughter got diagnosed, that was one of the worst days of my life because all I could think of was, oh my gosh, she's going to live my life. But I do know at this point, I've done home dialysis for 5.5 years now, and I feel incredible. And so I know if I can do this, she can do this.
Okay. See, and that's the thing too, is there's so many people that are on dialysis. Dialysis takes a quarter of all Medicare dollars. So out of every $4 of Medicare, one of those dollars goes to kidney disease. But yet not many people talk about it. It is like this thing that's behind closed doors. And that was my hardest thing, is trying to find support, trying to find, how can I do this? How can I keep going camping? How can we keep doing this? And there just wasn't anything out there. So that's why I started my own
support
group.
Okay.
And when I started it, she wanted nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
And I was like, I got to start this. I need to find answers. I need to try to find how we can do this and this. And we got hooked up with so many different people. And they'd be asking questions. And I'm working at my job. Then we'll come home doing dialysis. Then I'm on my phone just going through all these questions that I'm getting about dialysis. And I'm asking her why laying next to her. I'm like, hey, what did you do about this? What did you do about this?
Right.
Until finally she was seeing how many people were joining the group and they're helping.
Right.
And they would ask to talk to her and ask questions. Well, she dived in too. And it just kind of exploded to this huge group. It's over 6,000 people now. And that's what, when somebody's sick, I tell them, no matter what, join a support group of that sickness.
Yeah.
Right.
Because at that time, they think they're alone. They think that this is the only thing happening to them, but they're not. There are so many people out there. And that's why I tell them, join the group, ask a question. Because if you ask that question, I can find probably hundreds of people that are going through the same exact thing as you.
Sure.
And when you do find a support group, though, be very careful, because I know, I'm not sure in the medical world for other diseases, but with this one, a lot of the support groups are really negative and really just depressing. So find a support group that uplifts you, that helps you live life better.
Right.
Well, and like you were saying, you saw us on TikTok. And I post videos all the time of blind chick living. And it's to make it so that the normal person can do this.
Right.
I kind of joke that I micify dialysis, because I try to make it to where what they show you and then how I actually do it at home. And of course, follow what your team says, follow what they do. But let's be honest, when you get home and it's behind closed doors, you are going to find shortcuts and you're going to find ways to do it your own way.
Right.
And so we found safe shortcuts. We mm-hmm. found ways to make this livable. And so we post videos of us doing it so others can do it too. We post videos of us traveling. We just got back from DC, you know, we take our machines with us. And so we show people how we fly with it, how we do this. And because if we can do this, there's nothing special about us.
Right.
We kind of joke that if a blind chick and a dumb mechanic can do this, anybody can.
Hey, now don't be knocking mechanics now. I was a mechanic for 20-something years. Come on now.
Well, and that's the thing with Ho getting healthier too. As a care partner, all life gets put on hold too.
Right.
You know, I had to give up on promotions. I had to give up on bonuses. I went on FMLA. And when she was sick, I didn't know what was going to happen with my work. Mm-hmm. And when she got healthier, it got to where I could start applying for those promotions again. I am not hanging off an aircraft anymore. I'm actually sitting at a desk. I'm an engineer now. So, and I credit it to home dialysis and her health.
Right.
Because there was no way I could have done any of that stuff if we didn't know how to do this.
Yeah.
So
Can I ask Christina a question? Before or during your pregnancy, did any of your healthcare providers warn you about the increased likelihood of preeclampsia due to the kidney condition? Or
so I went to my kidney doctor as soon as I got pregnant, and he did send me to a specialist. So the doctor I went to, he was supposed to be specialized in patients with kidney disease. But he was just too busy. And this doctor, he was one of them. He was very social. He got people in and he got them out. But you just became the number to him. And so I truly think he had to have known there was a problem, because I went in for like 6 or 7 extra appointments. And I specifically threw out toxemia. And he said, no, you're fine. Huh. I even got a big story about how he loves that the women during the summer, they wear flip-flops, and in his waiting room, all of them have sausage toes, and how normal that is during pregnancy. And that I was just being too cautious, and it was my first time, and I just needed to listen to him. And so I really think it's just he just was packing too many people in.
Yeah.
I think, too, that when she got that blood test, it was just an indication. And at that time, if they would have had her seen kidney doctors more often, if they would have taken this more serious, then maybe this stuff could have been prevented.
Well, and that's the thing is nowadays, that's what we're doing. We're actually focusing on prevention now instead of you fight the battle after you end up in that chair.
Right.
Because most people don't understand once you are in kidney failure, you are in kidney failure the rest of your life.
Yeah.
Right.
Even if you get a transplant, that's just a treatment. That is not a guarantee the rest of your life you're out of this world.
Right. That's why we've been to DC, a dozen times now?
Yeah.
And we actually go talk to Congress about doing more preventative care and stuff like that. Because it's amazing how many people, you don't hear about people, a lot of people saying, oh, I'm in stage 1 kidney disease. Or you don't ever hear about that.
No.
I'm on dialysis.
Right, right.
I crashed into dialysis.
Right.
When 5 years before, if they would have just done one blood test, they could have been telling them, hey, you have this and this, let's watch your diet, or let's start a mild form of the Leno diet.
Yes.
So a quick blood test could kind of alleviate a lot of that.
Exactly. And so like we kind of, when we go in there, we tell, okay, last year we had, what, when you have your heart surgery and all your problems, it was about a $10 million medical bill altogether. You know, insurance covered a lot of it and stuff like that. But we tell them, opposed to a $300 blood test,
right,
$10 million. And that's why $1 out of $4 goes to kidney disease, because it's, you go from not needing anything to wham, you're in dialysis needing a kidney.
Yeah.
And people just don't realize that diabetes and high blood pressure. Most people are walking around with high blood pressure and they don't even know that that high blood pressure is killing their kidneys.
Yep.
Right.
If you have high blood pressure, get the test every time you go to the doctor.
So Michael, quickly for you, or not quickly, but for you, what role do you play? What role do you have in Christina's dialysis treatment?
Well, since she's legally blind, I do a bit more of the care than the normal care partner.
Uh-huh.
And so I'll hook up her lines. I run her dialysis. When she had her graft, I would cannulate her. And so with her eyesight, she can't see the iPad and the screen. Mm-hmm. Now she knows how to set up the machine, take down the machine. She knows how to run the machine, but she doesn't have the eyesight to do it. So that's basically why I am. I come in and I'm a high boss.
Okay.
That was probably one of the biggest things that I failed when we went to Nocturnal is I take a sleeping pill. And am I going to be able to wake up? Am I going to be able to do the alarms? And it's never an issue. We have so many fail safes that we connect to her that if there is a leak or if there is a air bubble or anything like that, there's alarms that go off and you will wake up and you will address them.
And so. I do like to point out, I can, even with this system, I can set it up and I can break it down all on my own.
Okay.
The only thing I can't do is read the alarms.
Okay.
And again, I'm visually impaired. So what can somebody do with eyesight?
Yep. And I'm her care partner, but really anybody can be. I think I take a more active role in her care.
Sure.
But she wanted to go to Vegas with some of her friends. And so we had her friend come over. We gave her a crash course on how to watch the machine, what to do. Because that's one question too is, I don't know if my care partner can do all of what you're doing.
Understand.
And I tell them, listen, your care partner can be as much or as little help that you want. If you want your care partner to just be, hey, all I need you to do is cramp this and call 911. That can be their task.
Yeah.
Or they can be an active role like me, where I'm running dialysis, I'm setting it up, I'm taking care of a lot of stuff. My OCD kicks in and I do a lot of it.
All right.
But your care partner can be anything you want. And that's one of the biggest fears. I work for the government. I work on LCLAS. So I could be called away at any time. But I also know that with her knowledge, and kind of like when she went to Vegas, I got on a FaceTime call and I watched them connect. I watched and I was just kind of saying, hey, okay, go to this step, go to this step, go to this step. So there are ways that if I need to take a break or if I need to escape, you know, she knows that if I say I need some motorcycle time or I need some mountain therapy, she doesn't argue. I get away and I go do what I got to do. So.
Yep. And we like to joke and say when you're in dialysis, your weight changes a lot and you have what's called your dry weight. And that's the weight that you push to each time you get on the machine. And we always joke and say he's the only husband in the world that can be like, hey, Christina, I think your dry weight has gone up and not get in trouble for it.
Yeah.
You're looking like you've gained a few kilograms.
Right.
Let's see what we can do about that.
What inspired the two of you to start podcasting?
Because so many people had so many questions. And it's kind of like the same reason I started my group is when I was trying to find the group that worked for me, I was asking so many questions and pushing the envelope that I was actually being kicked out of groups because I'd get in some and I'd be like, hey, how do I go and do this on the generator? Can I run it off solar power? Can I do it up in the mountains? And the people would private message me, hey, you're giving these guys false hope. You need to stop this. I'm like, no, these guys need hope. And if we can give it to them, let's give it to them. And so many people are asking us questions of how do you do this? How do you do this? What do you think of this? To where we just kind of said, hey, we're not doing nearly enough already. So let's throw a podcast on it too. And
for me, the podcast, I think there's something very validating about being able to share your story. And I think when we have people on the podcast and share their stories and what they've been through, I think it helps you process it mentally. And so that's why I like the podcast.
I think some issues that we've had, like we did it a lot more in the past. We try to do it monthly now, but every month we will actually address issues that we had. And it's those questions that people are afraid to ask. And it could be sexual questions. It could be relationship questions that need to be addressed, but they're scared to ask them. So we kind of try to do that for them.
Yeah.
Okay. Could you tell us what advice you have for somebody who was recently diagnosed with a kidney condition?
go and get educated. Go and get educated immediately.
Okay.
Go and talk to him about PD. I like to tell people that I think PD is the number one choice to go to. It gets you ready for dialysis. PD can last 1 year. It could last 10 years. You never know with PD.
Okay.
My advice would be to think about all the things you do right now that you absolutely love that you don't want to give up. Make a list. When you sit down with your doctor, say, I still want to be able to go camping. I still want to be able to travel. And the thing is these modalities, there's different modalities that work better for different things in your life. And so you can customize which form of dialysis you're going to pick based upon those things that you need and want in your life.
And same with when the care partners will reach out to me and they'll say, he's done. He doesn't want to keep going. He's given up.
Yeah.
And he doesn't want to keep getting poked by needles. He doesn't want to keep doing this and this. And I tell him, okay. And that's one of the reasons I did the podcast too, was I'd say, okay, I want you to get on the podcast and I want you to play episode one. Play it loud enough that he can hear it, but just play it.
In the background. Yeah, right, right.
Once you stop that itch of, wait a minute, Christina's going camping, or I can still see my family. I can go in an RV. And it starts the conversation of, okay, dialysis does not have to be the end.
It's not a death sentence.
Right. And right. What advice do you have for family and friends of somebody that's living with the assistance of dialysis? What can they do to help support their family or friend that is going through dialysis?
Join the support group. Okay. And ask questions.
Okay.
Join the support group, get in there and find out what dialysis is. Most people think they just walk in a building, go to sleep for 3 hours and come out.
Okay.
When you look at Christina, she doesn't look sick.
Right.
But behind that closed door is a lot of stuff that, sure. that they need to be educated about.
Sure.
Yeah. Excellent.
And that's kind of the thing. I'm going to push myself to go and do something I probably shouldn't be doing, but I'm going to push myself to do it. So like with your family members, like understand that even if they are acting like they're doing just fine, they're probably hurting inside. So just be a little more patient with them, but please don't isolate them and don't think that something you say is going to offend them. Like be okay being honest and just talking to them, because the worst thing that can happen to a sick person is people just treading around them.
I also tell them, find an activity that you can do all the time, no matter how she feels.
Right.
We do weekly movies.
Okay.
If she's feeling sick, I can still take her to a movie. If she's feeling good, we can still go to a movie. So no matter what, we are still getting our date nights every week.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my getaway as well. I go in the theater. There's no medical. There's no phone calls. There's no, you know, it is just
normal life.
Normal time.
Right.
Yeah. And like I said, no matter how she feels, I can carry her into the theater.
And we are super lucky, because since we started doing that, like all of our family knows they have an open invite, but all of our friends have started doing it too. And so every Thursday we're going to the movie and our friends show up, their kids show up, and it's become like this huge event in the week. And it's something I can always be a part of.
Good, 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 good. How can our listeners learn more about the two of you, the Blind Chick Living podcast, your advocacy work, and your support group?
Well, first thing I tell them is just go and search on the internet, Blind Chick Living.
Okay.
You'll see tons of videos of her, either that or living on dialysis. If you hashtag Blind Chick Living or hashtag Living on Dialysis, everything will pop up. Okay. If you do a search in any music platform, Blind Chick Living or Living on Dialysis, our podcast will pop up.
Okay. Well, we'll be sure to add links on our website, because each of our guests gets their own page on our website. And we want to thank you very much for joining our show today. If anybody has questions or comments related to today's show, they can contact us at podcastdx@yahoo.com. They could look at our website for more information, podcastdx.com. And we're also on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, Instagram, and TikTok.
And if you have a moment to spare, please give us a review wherever you get your podcast. And as always, please keep in mind that this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regime, and never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something that you have heard on this podcast.
Till next week.